You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Want to join in on the conversation? Call or text 855-75-CIVIC. Now back to Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. It is 6 minutes after eight now. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. Glad you are here. So we've been talking a lot over the last couple of weeks about this tax proposal that the governor and Robin Voss and Devin LeMay put together. And, you know, it was going to fund some schools and everybody was going to get a little cash back. And some people were like, ooh, that sounds great. And other people went, no, that's not good at all. And then the Senate said yes, the House said no, or vice versa.
Senate said no, House said yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then it went away. Then the Legislative Fiscal Bureau came out a couple days later because a poll came out right after the proposal got defeated, mm-hmm. and most people said, "Oh, you should have passed it." And then the fiscal report came out couple days later, went, well, actually, had you passed it, we would have had to spend an additional $3.5 billion over 4 years, and that would have left the state with a $2.95 billion deficit. And people went, oh, hold on.
Yeah.
But now, Governor Evers and Robin Voss want a new vote on this deal. And the Senate is saying, we're not going to agree to this. Jamie, what? Why must we make things so complicated here?
I'm not sure why we're making anything complicated with this, because Senate Minority Leader Dianne Heselbein has come out and said that her chamber refuses to come back into a session to take up this package that died in the Senate just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it hasn't been that long.
All the Senate Democrats and three of the Senate Republicans voted against it. And she went on to say that, you know, she actually came to this conclusion after she spoke with Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMayhew, who controls the chamber schedule. Here's my thing with this. Is there something new that we didn't know? Has there been amendments made to this bill, or is it just the governor and Robin Voss deciding, well, let's give it a shot,
let's
once
try
again.
It again,
what,
because they saw the poll numbers. And that's our question to you. Now that you know how much the proposal would have really cost the state, you've got a much fuller picture. Does that change how you feel about this proposal, and do you think there should even be another vote on this tax deal? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Yeah, did they? Because one of the big gripes was that it was all done behind closed doors. So if there has been an amendment, it would be behind closed doors again.
Yeah.
And I didn't mind that part of it, because the open doors have been debating this forever. I didn't mind that they brought a deal to the floor that had been negotiated in private. But now we see, one, it's been voted down. Two, we see the actual cost. And that, at least for me, I'm not too proud to admit that that's when I changed my mind. Because I was for the initial proposal.
Of course.
I thought compromise is good, and we got to take short-term wins over long-term battles. Then all of a sudden, the actual price tag came out, and I went, oh, that's not what you sold us.
No,
this is a whole different bill of goods, and I'm glad it got defeated. So why come back?
What I think is,
what are you going to do? What do you got for me now?
It doesn't sound like anything. It just sounds like they're going off of the momentum of the Marquette polling. And by the way, you're right. Initially, people who participated in that Marquette poll, 80% said that they, you know, would have liked to see the surplus bill pass. Once they found out about the $3.5 billion deficit over the next 4 years, it's still a high number, but that support drops to 69%. So it's still high, because people are looking at property taxes. They're looking at maybe not having to go back to the polls for a year or so to vote on another school referendum, because nobody wants to be the bad guy and be like, look, I've done all I can. I can't allow my school taxes to go up, but I really need kids to have education. Nobody wants to make that choice in the voting booth. No, nobody. But you have to.
People liked the idea of getting a little cash back.
Of course.
Granted, it was a very small percentage. It wasn't going to really make a huge difference. But if one day you get a check for $300 or $600, if you're a couple, you get that in the mail, you go, oh, boy, yeah. that pays the groceries for the month, or that's whatever it is.
Alicia chiming in on our YouTube chat this morning says, why are we trying to go for the same bill? Like, learn a lesson, make a better deal? I mean, that's kind of where I'm at on the whole thing.
Alicia with her common sense.
It doesn't sound like the Democrats are going to change their minds on the Senate side and all of a sudden be like, you know, a $3.5 billion deficit, not a big deal. Let's just pass. That's not happening. Nobody's passing that on the Senate side. It's still going to get hung up. The thing that I think bothers me most about all of this, and I keep going back to this, and I can't get rid of the nagging feeling in my head. Tony Evers, as governor of this state, whether you agree with everything he's done or not, he's been fairly measured in how he's responded to things, right? He's put a lot of thought in. He has made sure that Democrats and Republicans could come to the same table when appropriate, when needed. He has been that type of governor. And even Republicans can't actually deny that he's been like that, and they don't actually deny that he's been like that. Why this bill? Why, on his way out of office, is this the bill he's hanging his hat on? And that's what I can't get out of my head, because this is not a great bill. And this is the one that he is adamant needs to get passed. And that is what I can't rectify in my own brain. Why this bill? Why this particular moment?
It's probably with Voss and LeMahieu, too. This is a legacy move, because we know all of them are done at the end of this term.
Sure.
So they leave with being the guys who funded schools and gave Wisconsinites breaks on their property taxes. They didn't leave. They left the state better than it was, because now, you know, the property taxes will not keep skyrocketing and be that one of the highest in the nation. So it's a way for them to leave on a bipartisan note. Their final act is working together. After all the years of discord between them, they came together at the end to produce something that actually helped all the people of Wisconsin.
Because there were some good things in the bill. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like there weren't a few good things that popped up in that bill. Here's the thing that I guess, again, that I keep going back to. You were leaving the state with a $2.5 billion surplus, right? This has been the negotiating point. Now, all of a sudden, you're like, yeah, heck with it. We're going to just leave you with $3.5 billion in the red when I actually gave you a surplus and left you on good terms?
Alicia sent a message saying, hey, there was a lot of good stuff, just like you did, Jamie. And yes, I know. I was all for it until we got the actual receipts.
Right.
And then I went, no, you didn't tell me this. You didn't tell us that, like you said, Jamie, all of a sudden we go from a surplus to a deficit.
Right.
And we blow through all of this extra money. No, you're putting us in a deeper hole than we're already in with a very short-term fix. And if that legislative fiscal bureau report had not come out, I still would have said this should have passed.
Yeah.
And I would probably be on the side of the governor and Robin Voss saying, yes, let's get back in and try to hammer this out before we're done. But now it comes across as the most fiscally irresponsible proposal I've seen in a long time.
And it feels very not Tony Evers-esque. Right? Like it really does to me. And look, I'm not going to sit here with my rose-colored glasses and be like, oh, our governor's perfect. No governor's perfect, right? No governor's perfect. I understand that. These are also elected politicians who are also human. They make mistakes. Sometimes the judgment is off. It's hopefully why they have good people around them to help combat some of that, right? So I understand that. So I'm not going to sit here and pretend that. It feels very off for some reason to me. And you're right. Maybe it is a legacy thing. But to go out knowing that you could leave a $2.5 billion surplus, to potentially leaving up the state in debt by $3.5 billion, I don't know. It feels like the wrong hill to die on to me.
Yes, and going with what you're saying about it being a little, and I'm going to use the colloquialism for the kids, Jamie, because we're talking to a lot of young kids.
Yes.
Seems a little sus. What Parker always perks up. Oh, look at the old man has a word I understand.
Never sure if he has to double check he's using it right with me.
No, I'm using it right. That one I know. But the point is, were they hiding this Fiscal Bureau report? Did they know? They had to know this beforehand. Somebody had to crunch the numbers.
Right.
So you were hoping, and I don't know, this is conjecture. Were you hoping to get a vote through before people found out about this report and have it passed before we knew how much it was actually going to cost us? Or were you, I can't believe Tony Evers, Robert Voss, and Devin LeMahieu are stupid men who wouldn't have checked the math. I don't believe that.
No.
So something is...
And let's
there's something weird there, right?
We should know. This is where, I know there's been all this discussion about the surplus, right? There's been so much discussion about the surplus. There's been so much discussion about the surplus. There's been so much discussion about this bill. There's been so much discussion over the last few weeks about, who's going to control this surplus? Will Tom Tiffany get to control it? Will a Democratic governor get to control it? There's a new House. There's a new Speaker. All of that. The point that I can't shake, though, is this one. They had to know that they were actually putting the state in debt. And I just, for some reason, I can't rectify it because it just feels very off for a fiscally conservative Robin Voss. It feels very off for a very major Tony Evers. And that's what I keep going back to. I've read all the discussions. I've listened to all of the discussions. But at the end of the day, it just feels like this is the wrong, literally, as I just said, the wrong hill to die on for all three of these men who are leaving office.
Even if this isn't the case, it has a very bait and switch kind of feel to it.
It does.
And I don't like that. I don't like feeling like somebody tried to dupe me.
Right.
And that's really what everybody in Wisconsin should be feeling. Even if you still are saying, the bill had a lot of good things and it should have been passed.
We all want property tax relief, right? I get it.
We all want property tax relief. We all want schools funded. We all want special ed to get funded.
Yes.
All of that. Yes, it's all great, but at what cost?
Right.
And if you give us the actual cost and we're able to make a decision that way, that's one thing. If you try to pull the wool over our eyes, then it's a whole other kettle of fish, and I don't like the way it smells.
I mean,
how'd you like that analogy, Parker?
The other thing I keep thinking about was this a way for all three of these men to leave office by giving is this why they want it passed? Because by giving these rebate checks, even though they're not big, do they feel like this is a way of giving back to the Wisconsinites so that they go down from their political careers in like this bigger moment? Like,
you know how short our memories are.
I know.
How long do you think we're going to remember $300 when in 4 years we've racked up a $3 billion debt?
The only thing I can keep thinking of is all three men have a stake in this, right? They all have a stake in it because they all want either a Democrat in office again and a democratically run legislature, or they want a Republican governor with a Republican run legislature. It feels like it was a way to me, this is just me, reading all of it and watching everything, it felt very much like all three men trying to buy off the voters. Remember our party?
Yeah, but it also then, to your point, could be a way to scapegoat the other. Because once the real numbers come out, Voss and LeMahieu could go, it was the governor. And Evers could go, so that the Democrats have their cover and the Republicans have their cover. There's way too much going on with this
to
figure it out.
It's our property taxes.
Stop with the icky politicky. Icky politicky. Oh, the press has been banned again. Why? We'll find out after this Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. It is 8:22 right now. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. The Pentagon has barred journalists from its press office. How do you think the press should respond to this ban? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I saw this headline, and of course, I don't believe all the headlines. I always have to, you know, everybody has to read the stories. But it is what it sounds like. Once again, you know how much Pete Hegseth loves the press. He loves the press as much as Donald Trump loves the press because the press has the audacity, Jamie. We do this all the time. We ask pesky questions. We try to get to the truth. We try to find out what's going on to share it with the American public. Sometimes there's very friendly press and they don't ask the hard questions. They just compliment you on your suit.
It gets really awkward when they do, though, because sometimes they do. Sometimes they do. It's awkward.
I feel bad for them. I'm not mad at them. I'm sad for them. I'm like, you are really a spineless flesh sack, and I don't understand it. Well, in another series of moves restricting media across the Pentagon, the Defense Department has declared that its press office is now a classified space, inaccessible to journalists. Well, that would it's not a press office then, is it? On X, acting Pentagon Press Secretary Joel Valdez confirmed the move, saying there was nothing controversial about it, and that it came because speechwriters who use classified material now are occupying the space. Well, how about give those speechwriters their own office? That doesn't seem to make sense. Maybe, where did they write speeches before?
Maybe that's not in an open room. I've been in a lot of those press rooms and media rooms over the course of time. They're usually just one big open room, and there's not a lot of privacy. Sometimes there's a door. No. Sometimes it's not even a closed door. It's just like a holding room, right? And so maybe there's somewhere in there that you could maybe put them or do something different. Just saying. And let's be real. I mean, this isn't an anomaly based on what the Pentagon has done in the past with the press. This is just a pattern that we've seen from them since Pete Hegseth became the Secretary of Defense.
Christopher is in Beaver Dam. He's listening on WISS. He says it's like the old episode of MASH. The general during a press conference says, "This is a press conference. What's with all the questions?"
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that. Thank you.
They don't. Yes. Thanks, Christopher. They don't want questions. But yes. So they're lying again. The speechwriters aren't in the press room using classified information. The speechwriters are in there watching the speech that they wrote somewhere else because there's not a chance that you're going to have computers open in an area.
Well,
the speechwriters have been writing speeches in the Pentagon for a long time. Yes, maybe they are. Maybe they're sending all their speeches over, what's the app that Pete Hegseth was?
WhatsApp.
Signal.
Was he on WhatsApp? Yeah, Signal and WhatsApp.
The
Signal,
yep.
This administration loves those two apps.
I don't know. Well, this was reported by the Washington Post. It took place against a backdrop of escalating tensions between the U.S. media and the second Trump administration. They have played out both in the public arena and at times in court. You remember the Pentagon pulled everybody's press credentials who wouldn't sign a loyalty oath.
Yeah.
In October. So most press outlets who had any sort of journalistic ethics at all turned in their thing. We're not signing a loyalty oath to you, you knuckleheads. And then the New York Times sued in December, or in May rather, for the second time in 5 months, arguing that a requirement that journalists be escorted while on Pentagon grounds violated the First Amendment and is an unconstitutional attempt by the Pentagon. So they're doing everything they can. One, because every time Pete Hegseth is asked a question, it is revealed how inept he actually is and unqualified he is for this office. And also, maybe they don't want to have to answer questions about why he has blocked all promotions of black and female officers in the Navy.
Right. Yeah.
So,
I mean,
you know, those are pesky questions, Jamie. If I have to justify that.
And nobody wants to have to answer those. And nobody wants to have to get up to a podium and then call the press, say that the press is lying, even though there's paperwork saying that this has actually happened. Because that's essentially what's going to happen. Because it's a pattern, right? It's a pattern.
Yes.
And we've seen this pattern since the beginning of this administration. And most of us are never going to have the opportunity to walk through the halls of the Pentagon, That's why we depend on journalists, because journalists are covering the military. They help explain how our money is being spent as taxpayers, by the way, and what decisions are being made and how those decisions, like, you know, blocking promotions of qualified black and female officers mm-hmm. might actually affect national security. Plus, not to mention the fact there's military families that probably want to know what's actually happening at the Pentagon. And also as the country of a whole. I mean,
you don't hide information from the public. That's not you work for us.
Yes.
That's the ultimate thing. We have a right to know what's going on. We have of course there's classified information. Of course. We understand that. We don't need to know the operational specifics. We don't need to know troop movement and maps. But we need to know, why are we in a war?
Right.
Why aren't you promoting certain people? Why are you barring the press from your meetings?
Why are you so inept? But this is how you get public skepticism. And then this is how all of those conspiracy theories start to grow and build as well. Because there's not actual reporting coming from this administration or actual fact and actual news. So people have to assume that they just know what's happening, and then they make up their own theories based on what they're hearing from the other press junkets, the ones that are more friendly to this administration, coming out of the Pentagon or the White House or whatever it might be.
Is it time finally? And we've had this debate before. I understand that access is where you get the information, but mm-hmm. if they're blocking your access, isn't it time for the mainstream press, the big networks and newspapers, to finally really speak out and start? We need to shine more lights on this, because they're not. The access you're getting is not helping.
No.
The access you're getting is worthless because the information is worthless.
Yes.
When does the cost of a college education outweigh the benefits? You tell us after this. It's Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
Fairly solid, better than expected. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
8:35 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. If you're in Appleton and Oshkosh listening on WISS, or in Eau Claire on 93.5 The Tap, or in Wisconsin Rapids listening on WFHR. We also can't forget WBZH up in Hayward. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember, coming up after 9 o'clock, you're going to have another chance to qualify for our Accelerate Your Summer Multi-State Text to Win contest. So be listening for the new word across all civic media platforms. Use your civic media app and be ready to text in and win. I love that. And of course, we're giving away some cash and some really great prizes, going to help you with some groceries too for our grand prize. So all in all, not a bad way to spend a Tuesday, Brian.
Not at all. And I'm looking at this text that just came in. Now, we talked about the polar bears at the Madison Zoo almost 2 hours ago.
Yes.
And the text is just coming in. But how did you pronounce the zoo name? I admit it up front, I wasn't sure.
You guys were saying it funky. It's Vilas.
Vilas?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't remember what you said. You said something kind of funky.
Okay. Well, Vilas, thank you for the text. Thank you for the text this morning.
I'm mispronouncing something, correct me.
Neither one of us are native to this area, so sometimes we're going to get things wrong. So we appreciate corrections, and we like to make sure we get things right. So we appreciate the text this morning.
And
thank you.
I'm glad you corrected me, but I'm always just going to go, you want to go to the zoo?
Madison Zoo.
If I'm in Madison, it'll be the Madison Zoo. Yeah. If I'm in Milwaukee, it's the Milwaukee Zoo. Whatever local zoo.
Yes.
If I say let's go to the zoo, figure it's the local zoo.
Yeah, probably.
I'm not going to go just on a whim on a Wednesday afternoon. We're not going to drive to San Diego.
Right.
San Diego.
That would be lovely. Literally, thank you so much for the text.
All right,
Vilas. Make sure you keep us on our toes, and make sure you keep us honest with our pronunciations. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it maybe, you know, maybe if we had gotten more college education, Jamie. We both graduated from college,
but we need
a little more, but unfortunately we're not going to be able to afford it. What is where's the diminishing returns? 855-75 Civic, 855-752-4842. Where does the cost of a college education outweigh the benefits? Like for, as you're looking, maybe your kids are getting ready to go to college. Maybe you went and you're saddled with a ton of debt, and now you're rethinking that point. The reason I bring this up, and in the whole scheme of things, the increase is not a ton. No. But the Universities of Wisconsin Board of Regents are going to vote on a proposed 2% tuition increase for in-state undergrad students for next school year. If approved, it would be the fourth consecutive tuition increase since the 10-year tuition freeze ended in 2023. So 2%, not all that much. It's really going to increase in-state tuition by about $210 a year. And again, $210 is real money.
Yep.
But when you look at the whole bill, you go, well, I'm already paying this much. What's another $210? Out-of-state students are going to see a 4% increase. Everything's going up. I understand that.
Yeah.
And I you know, we all feel it. I wonder, though, at what point is education going to become so out of reach? Like, we're talking about housing and we're talking about health insurance. College educations are starting to get to that point, too. Now, there's a lot of great state schools that are more reasonable, and there's community colleges. Yep. There's other avenues. But if you want to go to a big-time university, if you're that smart and you're that, you know.
Yeah. Well, and let's be clear, depending on what UW university you go to around the state, your tuition will be a little bit different. But with that being said, this tuition increase essentially covers things like facilities, utilities, employee pay, student services, and they also have to stay competitive with other Midwest universities. Do you know why they're lacking that money? Because there's been a huge cut in federal funding for our universities, for our state-run universities. And so these universities are having to make decisions to make sure that they can still have really great education. And I get it. Things are not cheap. And this is only part of the problem with why our education is increasing in price. However, with that all being said, I think it answers a little bit of your question, because this administration has had a war on education. They don't want people to be educated, so they don't think it's important. And if they do, they don't want it going to public universities. They want the money going to more private universities, because it turns out that
they can control the message.
That's right. And private universities are also where sometimes, not all, depending on the university, but your more wealthy families will send kids.
Of course.
It's kind of like the same war on...
Legacies.
It's legacies, but it's also kind of like the same war on public education versus charter schools or private education that the GOP has had on our entire education system.
And I know, like, I listen to what we talk about, and sometimes I'm like, are we being hysterical? But we're not. Because if you look at it, if you have an educated, well-fed, healthy populace, they're going to question things, they're able to make decisions, and they're able to vote. Well, they're trying to take away votes for many people. They're keeping us underfed because they're cutting school lunch programs, they're cutting help with SNAP benefits, they're cutting all that. Healthcare, we were just talking about the price of healthcare. If we're sick, we're not going to want to leave the house. We're not going to want to vote. We're not going to be out on the streets protesting. And if we're dumb and we continue to gut public education and cut funding to universities, we're not going to have the great minds that are going to perhaps replace the regimes that are in place to make our lives better. So I know it sounds crazy. And years past, it never would have crossed most of our minds. But when you start connecting the dots, and you go, why are they so fixated on this? Well, there's a reason. None of this is done in a vacuum.
No. And I think when I start thinking about, and even though this is a 2% increase, right? And on average, it's going to be across the entire system. UW says, including the tuition, the fees, room, board, it's going to be about a 2.5% increase on average across the entire system. But here's what I also think about. I think about college students and families who need to take out loans. Because if you're taking out loans to go to school, which a lot of students do, that means that you're it means that you're taking on more debt when you graduate. And that then means longer interest payments, higher interest payments, longer payments, whatever it might be, which is just another problem with the entire education system. Because at the end of the day, and we're going to talk about it in just a second, turns out that for our recent grads, there's not enough jobs to go around.
No. And if you look, if you remember, they're trying to change up the government loan programs for schools and privatize them. Well, somebody then is making more money off of that. And again, it's not you and I.
No.
It's a friend of a friend of whoever.
Corporations and CEOs and boards of directors and all of that. That's who's essentially making that money.
I always have to be careful when we start doing that, and I've said it a couple times today. I'm not one of these anti-corporation guys.
No.
I'm all for capitalism. I would like to be making more money.
Of course.
And I don't think there's anybody who could honestly say, yeah, I don't want to make more money.
I just wish that I'm not anti-capitalist.
There's a responsibility.
Yes, that's just it. My family has owned businesses my entire life. Some very lucrative businesses. They've been in boardrooms and things like that. But at the end of the day, they still actually cared about the people who worked for them,
right,
underneath of them, and the people who didn't make as much as them. And I think that's where the difference is. We have hit this level and echelon of this need for money and greed in this country that it's mind-blowing, and it's unfathomable to me that this is what is so important to a huge section of this country: money and greed and always having more. And I understand that, you know, more prerogative to you if that's how you want to live your life. I'm not going to judge that. But at the same time,
I'll judge it for you, Jamie. I'll handle all the judging here.
But at the same time, what is that getting us? It's making people who don't have that type of income poorer, to a point where people are making really hard decisions. And it's not getting better, and I don't see it getting better. And even if this administration ends in 2 years, or even at midterms, because, you know, there's a different Congress, I don't see that being fixed, and I certainly don't see it better. And I'm going to be clear, both political parties are not great at it right now. Neither of them are great.
I think there will come a time where there will be some kind of class war. Not a guns and missiles kind of war,
right,
but there's going to be some sort of revolt, because you can't keep creating a class of ultra rich and then have such a big class of struggling people. And it's not for lack of trying.
Right.
I've said this, you've said this. People are working and they're still having to go to food banks. So there is going to come a time when enough is enough.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's in November at the ballot box. It might come, who knows how it will present itself, but I do think there is going to come a time of reckoning where things have to be balanced out a little. I'm not talking about equity across the board. Everybody doesn't have to make the same amount of money.
No.
We're not talking communism.
It's not utopia.
No, we're talking about let's balance the scales a little bit
so that
people don't have to worry about getting their medicine.
Right.
Parker, real quick, you're lucky you have your first job. It's not AI. We've seen all these commencement speeches where AI people are getting booed and booed. It's not AI that is the true villain here.
No.
According to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, remote work is the villain.
Yeah.
The more people that are working remote makes it harder for companies to hire entry-level employees, because entry-level employees historically have been mentored by older employees. And if everybody's working at home, there's no one to mentor the utes, and the utes then don't get a job. And once a ute doesn't get a job, then they struggle for their whole career, because if you're struggling to find your first job,
that's right,
then all of a sudden you have slower career growth, you have lower long-term earnings, fewer opportunities later in your career. So AI is not the boogeyman.
No.
Me staying at home to work is the boogeyman.
In fact,
you're welcome.
Damn you, Brian.
In fact, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York actually found that remote work actually explains why 2/3 of young college graduates are unemployed since the pandemic. 2/3. Let's be real. I have a recent college grad. Parker, you're a recent college grad. It's brutal out there. It is brutal for job searching right now if you're in that category. And hey, guess what? Your tuition's going up. So when those student loans come into the, that's right. When you have to pay those back, you're gonna not be making enough to probably pay those. And that
Parker, do you want me to come in and mentor you a couple days next week?
Yeah, sure. Okay. I would.
I'll
love
mentor
that.
You. Oh, I'll mentor you.
I want you to be here Wednesday, Thursday, Brian. That's what I want next week.
Okay.
I'll see what I can do.
So it's like this. We've talked a lot about these never-ending circles this morning, as far as the money to you know, living ratio, and this is just another one of those examples for young college students, right? If you can't get a job, and all of a sudden you got to pay your student loans back, you're probably not using that fancy degree. Been there, done that. Not judging
That's
here.
Right.
You're probably not using that fancy degree because you know you got bills to pay. And
yeah, and everybody's working at home.
Yeah.
So
wow.
Thanks, Biden. I just throw that in. Because that seems to be the line, right? From the administration. Administration, we blame Biden for everything. You know what I'm gonna blame him for too? Malls and curfews. Oh, Jamie, we gotta get into it. People are going crazy at the malls and we're trying to stop it. It's Daybreak. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's the Civic Media Network, 8:52 right now. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. Here's a question that comes right out of 1983. Hey, do you and your kids still go to the mall? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Or if the answer was no, when was the last time you were at a mall?
I and can't
Jamie,
even tell you.
Jamie, you found this story and you were fascinated by it.
I did. I was fascinated by it because this isn't, I mean, like 90210, right? The original, not the reboot that they had on for a few years is what brings back. And everything from the 90s is big again. So apparently malls are making a bit of a comeback for the young folk. And it turns out, though, that because there's more young people congregating at the malls, malls across the country are restricting accompanied teenagers because there's been a lot of gatherings, fights, shoplifting incidents, and also social media organized mall takeovers. Now, here's the thing. We were talking about this at the break. I don't know how prevalent malls are, especially in the Midwest anymore. I know, like, on the West Coast, if you go to the West Coast and have a chance to visit, say, California, beautiful big outdoor malls where people are hanging out. It still looks very much like what you used to see on TV in the 90s. That is what you kind of equate to it because you see people hanging out. They're shopping. They're doing their thing. It's not like the malls here where it's a closed building.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? It's well, a little bit mall-esque.
The trend went from like a shopping center, an outdoor thing, to the enclosed malls. And then it went back to these open air malls. And I'm trying to think, even in Milwaukee, the malls that I used to go to around there are gone.
Right.
I'm out toward 94. Is that mall still there in Madison? Out on.
I'm trying to think. We have the West Mall and the East Mall, and then of course you have the big outlet mall near
Johnson Creek.
Gotta love an outlet mall. Now you got all these. We used to live very close, within a mile of a smaller mall.
Sure.
But they had a few things. And at least 4 or 5 times a year, it was a multi-police response because something had gone out on social media, and there were hundreds and hundreds of kids swarming the mall, running across the busy streets, creating a thing. So
I get it.
I live pretty close to a mall. I know they have a sign. I go there on Christmas Eve to pick up my Cinnabon. And then if I order something from Penny's or Macy's, I go in the one door right by the catalog pickup corner.
Of course.
That's an old online pickup. I don't wander the mall in the day.
No,
but they do have signs about unaccompanied minors after 6 o'clock.
Because a lot of malls are now requiring anybody under 18 to be accompanied by adult, often 21 or older during certain hours, as you're alluding to, especially on weekends and on school breaks. And owners of these malls say that these policies have helped reduce all of this disruptive behavior, the violence, the theft, the large crowds that make shoppers and employees feel uncomfortable. And now they can feel safer in their mall shopping experience. I've got to be honest with you. I haven't been in a mall in a very long time. The last one I was at, you wouldn't have, I mean, a disruption might have been pleasant because it was, there was nobody in there. It would have been people milling around. I think I saw maybe like three or four people the last time I was in a mall. It was really kind of sad in that particular corridor. Parker, you're a young person. Are you milling around at the malls a lot?
I wasn't at all in high school. I haven't, but I might now. Like if I had a buddy coming into town, like, all right, let's just kind of dink around for a while.
I was even in high school, we were talking about that. My friends on the weekend would be like, you know, we had to drive an hour to our closest mall.
Oh, I'm not doing that.
And I would be like,
yeah, that's
well, it was South Dakota, right? We were lucky we had population.
You can't, you can't spend the whole day shooting pheasants out of your car.
This
you
is true.
Do something else.
This is true. They'd say, well, let's go to the mall this weekend. My mom's willing to drive us, you know? And I'd be like, really? Why don't you let me sit here in the pretzel aisle by Auntie Annie's here, and I'll have a pretzel, and you come pick me up when you're done milling around.
See, Parker, this is going to surprise you. I'm old enough to remember when the first mall opened near my house.
I thought you meant ever anywhere. Okay.
No, not ever in the world. But we went, my buddies and I, we were like in seventh grade, and we would go to the mall with walkie-talkies.
Oh.
And that was a big adventure. We would all run around the mall with walkie-talkies.
Well, that sounds fun.
It was fun. We were dorks. And we had a great time. And then I had moved back to the area and had to go over there for some. And I was there when the mall was on its last legs. Now it's been demolished.
Sure.
But when there was like no anchor stores anymore, and it was like the weird little shops that you were whoever goes into
like the masseuse
place
parlors
like
and things like that.
Yeah,
in the middle
and
of
a lot
mall.
Of the Far Eastern art.
Yeah,
I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Who's buying samurai masks to put on their
no,
walls?
No, it's very strange. It's very strange. And here's the thing: I was never one who really, I don't really love to shop all that much anyway. And we were talking about this at the break. I would much rather go online. Look at the things that I like, know that there's a larger selection and a bigger size selection. And I'm usually the type of person that's probably looking for something fairly specific. So I'm going to go find it. I'm going to have a few of those things in different sizes and colors shipped to my house. I'm going to try them on in my bedroom on my own timeline where nobody's knocking on my door asking me if I need another bigger
Without
size.
The harsh fluorescent lights shining on you.
Because everybody looks good at what looks like a funhouse mirror too, right?
Yeah.
everybody's shorter, wider, whatever. And I don't need anybody tapping on the door asking me if I need the size up. I don't need that. Let me try it on myself and then I'll just return them. Like this is
me too.
I don't know. That seems like a much more productive way to get shopping done than being stressed out about it in a mall.
there was a calmness in the malls when I was on the road all the time. The mall always felt like home because it was the same stores. So wherever, other than some of the anchor stores being a different big department store regionally, the rest of the mall was the same. So it was like, oh, here's a little piece of normalcy
there
in
you go.
The mall.
Well,
I don't need to be normal anymore. I don't need the mall anymore.
And if you're a teen, don't disrupt the mall.
Yeah, stop it, teens. You're ruining everything. That's why we can't have nice things. And that's why we're leaving. We're done.
That's right.
We've had enough. Thank you for listening and being part of the program. We will talk to you again tomorrow. I'm Brian Noonan. This is Daybreak.
I'm Jamie Martinson. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is the Civic Media Network. Stephanie Miller is next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.